And 3, 2, 1. Yes, I'm starting. We're live from Redmond and wherever John lives and wherever Steve lives.
Yes.
Very descriptive.
Thank you very much. And our hope is that this week, this will be the best technical show in terms of production and no gremlins and audio and switching and all the things that we've ever done. I spent an hour in this room earlier today. I put little bits of tape here with our numbers on them so everyone's sitting in the right spot. We've got a new screen set up here so we can see our guests and they can see us. Can you say hello, John?
If they can see through
the
screen.
Hopefully their levels are good. The one thing I've forgotten to do, I've just realized, oh no, I have the chat open here so I can talk to people as well. So it does look like people can see us as well, which is good.
Well, it looks beautiful.
Why are we here today? Why do I have these fine gentlemen on my left? It's because, oh, and of course, Steve, sorry, on the way. Here he is, right next to me.
Thank you.
Because we're here to talk about Blazer yet again. The only thing that anyone ever really wants to talk about this on this show. Yeah, so we thought we'd bring them back because you have a new release.
We do.
Okay.
We ship 0.6. 0.6 is live. Went out last week with lots of new goodies for people to try out.
New goodies! Cool. You going to show us some stuff? Or are we going to... John, do you love the community this week?
Do you want to take John's...
I do love the community this week.
Then how about we switch to...
Yeah, I know. Here, just a second.
Community. Or we could just watch Steve drink his coffee.
Is it coffee or tea, Steve?
Tea!
It's tea, of course. Where? This is England.
Is it Twinings?
It's Tesco or something.
Tesco?
It's England.
Do you see my screen yet?
We do. We are all good.
Oh, yeah. This was
hooray!
Good stuff.
Okay, so this is a short, small collection of just Blazer links for this week. I have some other ones, but this is Blazer specific this week. So one thing I looked at was... it's kind of cool. People are kind of lighting up different things that have been in the .NET ecosystem and lighting them up on Blazer. So this one's an interesting, just a Serilog. You know, we've seen this in ASP.NET Core for a while, and here lighting up in Blazer. So the idea is like, you know, having structured data in your browser console. So I thought that was kind of cool. So this repo Serilog syncs browser console. Next one here. This one is cool. So Meher has set up, he needed to do medical imaging and he wanted to do it on the client side, which is pretty cool. So there's this DICOM format, and rather than kind of try and write something new,
Hold on. Blazer 6.0 just shipped apparently.
Like, yeah, he's already on it.
This guy is like on the like super insider track.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, not the preview, right?
I recognize his name, so I think he's talked to us a couple times.
Yeah.
So yeah, and we featured him a lot over time on the stand-up. So yeah, so here he grabbed a NuGet package, and I think this is a really cool, like a powerful thing. People are looking at, you know, what are some advantages of Blazer, and definitely being able to use existing NuGet packages that you know work and run that code on the client is really pretty slick. So here he's pulled in a package that does DICOM package or parsing. So I believe it's faux DICOM drawing library. And so this is pretty like lightweight. I would imagine you'd want to do something maybe more in depth for something like, you know, he's just basically creating a bitmap and rendering the bitmap, and you could add on more stuff. You know, but this is neat to be able to show the using a NuGet package and directly in the client, you know, being able to parse and handle that without pushing it all up to the server.
That is cool.
Pretty slick. Okay, so this came up. I saw this float by. This is the Blazer Components 040. So the neat thing here, this is a charting library. This is charts.js and implemented using Blazer. So this charting always really, really nice to be able to do. And if you can handle that in a nice way on the browser, here's, you know, rendering out structured data and charting that. So pretty cool. All right, so here are two cool ones from Sarathal. This one is looking at using Cassandra API in Cosmos DB. So Cosmos DB, upcoming, there's support for this using EF Core. But what he's using here is another, the data stacks implementation of the Cassandra API. And pointing at Cosmos DB using that. So in this walkthrough, he goes through, creates a Cosmos DB front end. Then he's going to grab a NuGet package. So grabbing the Cassandra C# driver, and then, you know, pointing that at his Cosmos DB backend. And then he goes through and does a full implementation with all the CRUD stuff, doing an address book and you know, going and being able to edit addresses.
That one looks like it is client-side, right? Like, he looks like he picked the client-side template for that one. That's interesting. They have to do that from within the browser.
Yep. Nice. Here's another neat one. So this is another one from Sarathal. And here he went and did localization in the browser using Microsoft.js interop.
I literally asked Dan yesterday whether they'd thought at all about localization.
It's done. The community did it.
Yeah.
Someone did it. Someone cared enough to do it already.
So this is pretty slick. And so I'm guaranteed when I'll have read something wrong. But I... So, you know, sharp eyes here and tell me what I mispronounce or whatever. But the general idea, I believe, is all the localizations actually being pushed down to the client. So we have the ResX files, we have resources pushed down to the client. And then using the Microsoft.js interop in a bit here, there's some clever stuff where it's actually invoking and calling into that. So this is calling between the JavaScript and the .NET code, and then being able to localize on the client.
So specifically, just to clarify a thing from what I can see going by, they're using the JS interop in order to get the locale, or the language, or the culture, depends on which one, via the JavaScript. Because obviously you have that stuff set in your browser. So the JavaScript there are APIs that you can call that says, hey, I am looking at this page and my browser is set to English or Japanese or whatever. So I'm assuming they're doing that and then downloading just the resources they need from the server, I'd hope, or maybe they can't yet, but this is a prototype, and then they'll use the language they've determined from JavaScript in order to figure out which resource to load using the normal .NET APIs. Are they using Resource Manager, or are they doing it manually?
I don't know. I think it's manually, and it does look like there's requests and response. So it is possible that it is just pulling down the resources.
One thing we've considered is automatically setting the thread UI culture based on the browser's language.
That's a good
which
idea.
Which would, you know, eliminate one of the steps here.
Right, absolutely. Yep. And then I think I'm assuming that the request that you were talking about, John, is they probably have a controller set up that the Blazor app can use to ask for resources for the current language. And so they would pass the language up to the server, say, hey, I need the French resources, please, for this page or this resource. And it would then send it down, and then it would do the client-side swap using the Blazor stuff. That's my guess. I haven't read it. I'm just looking at the mechanics by reading as it goes, and that would seem to be how it would work.
Okay. Yeah, I'll send the links over. There's a decent amount of code here. So.
Nice.
But this is really neat to be able to see it. And so two nice ones from Sarathal. I'll keep an eye out for more from him. This is just a general WebAssembly one I saw come by. So this is from Lynn at Mozilla, and talking about calls between JavaScript and WebAssembly are finally fast, and some work on streamlining interop between the two. So I don't know how this relates to other browsers. I don't really know what's going on here. There's a lot of pretty pictures and big words, so I'm not really certain what's going on. I stuck to the headline mostly on this one. But it looks neat. I'm happy about this.
From what I understand, this makes calls from WebAssembly into JavaScript like as fast, if not faster, than like a JavaScript to JavaScript call. I think Steve, you did a deep dive into this, and I think I saw you commenting on this on Twitter that they did some really good work here.
I think I sent a DM to you and Steve and said, "Can you help me understand what this article means?" And then Steve wrote a mini essay in my DMs to explain it all. I'm like, "Cheers."
It's just about monomorphic calls, Damien. I mean, come on.
Thanks.
Yeah. So anyhow, neat, right? So I don't know how this relates to other browsers. Steve, is this something, do you know anything about that? Or?
I think it's good because it's setting a benchmark. As much as any browser pushes ahead of the others, that gives the rest of them a reason to try and catch up. And Firefox has definitely been the fastest at running WebAssembly so far, and it looks like they're pushing even further ahead with this. But that's great because that forces Google and Microsoft to try harder, catch up, and use some of the same techniques to close that performance gap.
So, John, I have to interrupt here. We have a message from your boss.
Oh.
He's asking, why on earth have you not added him to the call?
So you can do this in your Teams, just to add him to the call.
Well, the Teams isn't running on my, technically. It's a different machine.
I thought that we were going to not have any technical AV issues.
Well, there's always going to be one.
I think that this
is this
qualifies.
Technical or is this a directorial issue?
I think that this qualifies.
How do I add a
management problem? I think it's a management problem.
Well, I'm adding him now.
Good.
Okay.
We're all watching you do it because it's fun.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
I'm expecting a grand entrance now from Scott. He's all prepared.
Yeah. Okay. So he can make his dramatic defense right after this. Get all ready and fix his hair and stuff. Here's my last community link. Is the Blazor 060 experimental release. Hooray!
Yeah.
You can talk through this in more detail. One thing I always point out to people is how easy it is to get set up with Blazor. Like, it's literally a V6 package. So I think that is super cool.
You can build your first Blazor app in like under 5 minutes. Super easy, and super low touch. Like, it's not like you install the V6, you get templates, you create them. If you don't like the V6 anymore, you can uninstall it. It's super clean.
You can do it while your tea is brewing.
I have heard that is the case.
Yeah, so many of us have electric kettles now in America, right?
I do.
We do. We have one in the team room.
Scott, you've been to my house. You've seen my electric kettle.
The EF team room has one as well.
Very good.
Very old school. I have a tank under the sink, and it's always got boiling water. I just go over and...
I did say brewing, though, not heating the water. It's important that the tea brew after you've combined them before you start drinking it.
I just drink it right away.
Americans can't be taught. What is this?
Sometimes it's not dark enough. I don't know.
I'm going to get hate mail now because I'm
I brew it until
the
little
tea.
Leaves show up.
Awesome.
All right. I'm done sharing. That's the last one.
All right.
So Blazor 0.6 is here. It has some pretty neat stuff in it. We now have support for templated components in this release.
What are templated components, Dan?
What does that mean? That means that you can define components that take one or more template parameters to use as part of its rendering logic. And those template parameters can basically capture a chunk of Razor logic and then use that within the component's render method. Those templates can also be parameterized, like they can take an instance that they use as part of their logic. And they can now also be generic. So if you want to define a generic list view of T component that takes a collection of pets or whatever and render them as a list of pets as part of your UI, you can now do that through template components where the user gets to specify how they want each pet in that list to be rendered.
So it's actually interesting. That is the idea of generic controls or UI bits has been an ask in ASP.NET for
a little while,
since generics, like even back to my web forms days. And it's always been something that we couldn't do or weren't willing to bite off for various reasons because it was super complicated. But with the wonderful Blazor stuff.
Laid the right foundation.
Components definitely want it.
Yes.
Once you have templating and components, you start to need generics pretty bad.
Right. Okay. Is that all the stuff in
0.6? That's not all. So we also expanded our support for server-side Blazor. This is the model where you can take your components and instead of running them in the browser on top of WebAssembly, you can now also, alternatively, run them on the server on top of .NET Core. And then all your UI interactions actually get handled over a SignalR connection. So the server has the representation of the DOM. And then as it calculates DOM differences based off of user interactions, it can push the DOM diffs down to the browser. There's a little bit of JavaScript that runs in the browser to apply the UI updates. Any UI events that happen get pushed back to the server over the same SignalR connection. We ship that in Blazor 0.5. In 0.6, we enabled you to use the server-side Blazor with the Azure SignalR service. So now you can take your server-side Blazor app and scale it out to thousands of persistent connections. Leveraging the scalability that the SignalR service provides you. So that was also enabled in 0.6. And then probably also worth mentioning, since we're talking about server-side Blazor, at .NET Conf last month, we also announced that the server-side Blazor model, we previewed it with 0.5. We got a lot of feedback that there's quite a few people that actually like it and want to go ahead and ship with it. In our surveys, we asked people, how many of you, which of these hosting models, which one would you like to use? The vast majority, of course, are very interested in client side, and that is still the goal. But about 60% of Blazor users said, you know, that server-side model, that's all I need. In fact, that's what I want. I like the idea of having my code living on the server. I like the control. I like that the client can be thinner. It doesn't have the dependency on having a full WebAssembly capabilities in the client. That's actually really compelling to me. So we've decided to go ahead and move forward with shipping that. So server-side Blazor is going to get integrated into the next version of ASP.NET Core, which is shipping with .NET Core 3.0. And we decided to give it a new name to try and distinguish it a little bit from the WebAssembly support. We're calling it Razor Components. So server-side Blazor is going to become Razor Components in ASP.NET Core 3.0, which we'll be shipping, I don't know, sometime next year. I think we said that we would have the first preview bits of .NET Core 3.0 going out in early 2019. So we're pumped about that, because Blazor is really made up of two parts, right? Like, you have the component model, and then you've got this WebAssembly-based .NET runtime that really enables the client-side scenarios. The component model is flexible. It can run on the browser, it can run on the server. And in fact, we've made it so that if you want to start on the server and then switch to the client, you can do that by just basically changing a line of code, assuming you've written your components in a way that are abstracted from server-specific things. So we can make progress on the component model, and the WebAssembly-based runtime, that will continue experimental for a little while longer. We are still working very hard on that. We will continue, of course, to ship support for the client-side model on top of WebAssembly. We think of the server-side support as a path to get to that client. It enables us to ship a big chunk of Blazor as fast as we can while we continue to work on getting the runtime to be fast, to be small, to have good iterative build times. All those things are things that we're working on in parallel.
Yeah, and as others have pointed out, there's also some scenarios that just are better served possibly by the server-side scenario than the client-side scenario.
So there are things that you can do on the server that just feel so natural. Now, like, you can go ahead and go right to the database if you want to. You can use any .NET library that you want on the server because it's just .NET Core. Debugging just works as it normally does because it's just .NET Core running on the server. There's a lot of things that are very natural about that.
Well, like any set of things, I think there's a set of trade-offs. Like, if .NET's running in a different place from somewhere else, you get a different set of stuff you can do, a different set of capabilities, and that's traded off against things that you can't do commonly. So I think the way forward is both models, and like the one that we can commit to right now is the server-side model because we don't need a runtime for that. We've already got one. And so we're working through right now what it looks like to get that into the server-side ASP.NET Core we have today. We already have a server-side model. We have Razor Pages, we have Razor Views, we have stuff. And so we're working through the process of like, well, what does it mean to introduce a third thing? We have views, we have pages, and now we have components, and how do they all work together, and all that type of stuff. So.
And the good news is, if you're using any part of Blazor today, the component model and the tools are going to become baked.
Right.
And they're going to become done and stable and those kind of things. So if you're using Blazor in any way, this is really going to help you out, even if you're not using the server-side model.
Yes.
We're excited about that, and I think we want to show you a little bit about what's in the latest release.
Great.
Blazor 0.6.
Let's flip over to me, and I'm gonna have the world's least impressive demo here to start off. But this is going to be a gentle introduction to templated components. So if you haven't read the blog post or haven't seen anything about this, this is hello world. So we've got the standard Blazor template here. We've got the little counter. You click it, it counts. It's great. Everybody's seen it before. We're gonna turn this into a templated component, and we're gonna very quickly sort of just demonstrate, what does it mean to be a templated component? I am going to grab all of this content here. So here's the functions.
Are we all seeing Ryan's screen right now?
We are.
Is that being broadcast?
Yes. I'm not seeing it.
Oh, no.
Oh, let me check. All right. It's great. Like, what he's showing is very...
I'm going to uncopy paste this so Scott has a chance to see.
It is coming through.
Is it coming through?
You showed a counter.
Yeah,
it's on the live screen.
I heard no AV issues.
It is coming through on YouTube.
All right.
For the other remote attendees, you need to go out to live.asp.net and watch it.
Yeah, sorry, okay. The folks on the Teams call here, you don't get to see it. Okay. You have to live. You have to go and watch it like everyone else.
So I'm going to grab all of this content from the counter, and I'm going to stick this in this templated counter component. And then I'm going to replace some of the functionality here with this templated counter. So here's this component, I can use it. And then if we come back here, you'll see I've got these two render fragment properties. You might be familiar with using render fragment with the name child content before. That was like a magic name. It's sort of the implicit, whatever's in the middle of your component would show up in child content. Now you have the ability to define multiple render fragments and render fragments that take parameters and use these. So let's, I've defined these two. I did this ahead of time just to save typing. But let's go ahead and use them. So I'm going to replace this with the counter content. So this is the display of the counter. And so to do that, I'm going to do at counter content, because this is a func, and I'm going to invoke it. And then I'm going to pass in the current count. So I'm going to run this fragment of rendering that's in counter content, and I'm going to pass it the current count. And then what I can do is I can come over here to the usage of the component, and you can see that under here, what did I call this? I called this counter content. I have this counter content element. And then I can paste that inside here. And what you're going to see is that if you're inside this counter content block, you have this magic parameter called context. And this is sort of defined implicitly. If you want to use, so this is that integer that's going to be passed in here. If you hover over that, you can see that it's an integer. So the current count from here is going to be passed into this when this renders. And if I want to change the name of that, I can do that as well. So if I say like current count, notice that went red right away. I can take this back and I can put this here if I prefer a different variable name or something like that, and that's all fine. And then I've also got this button content. So let's take this out of here and we'll put the button content. And the way that you use these render fragments is you just effectively return them from Razor. Anytime in Razor you see like at foo, you can think of this as like, well, that's not a good example, but you can think of this as just like returning something to let it be rendered. So if you've got a render fragment of integer, it's a function that you call. If you've got a regular old render fragment, you just return it. And then let's come over here and let's fill that in. So I think I called this button content. And let's, ooh, that was gross. Let's give this, you know, I said hi, stand up. And if we run this, you'll see that my stuff is filled in here. And I've passed these two fragments into this other component. So the way that you use this, or sort of what I've accomplished here, I know this is kind of a hello world example, is you can build components that are very, very reusable, because you don't have to specify all the content inside these components. You can specify the content where they're used. We had a limited form of this before, but now we're taking it much, much further. We're making it much, much richer.
We had like child content before. And
we had child content
like a
before.
A special parameter, and now you can have multiple parameters. They can have names. They can have parameters. They can be generic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the basic example. For something more sophisticated, I'm going to come over here to the Flight Finder, and I have enhanced. You may have seen this demo before. Flight Finder is a sample that we've had around for a while. You can do a search, and you can see that I find some flights. I can sort. These two are already sorted by both those things. I can add them to this list. I can remove them from this list. It's pretty great. Pretty useful. We use this to plan all of Steve's travel to come visit us. But you can see that I've enhanced this now, and I've added a new tab to this. I've added the search for car rentals. So if we put in, I think Steve's coming later this month. So, you know, I'm going to pick the dates. I'll let him know later. It'd be great if he could leave tomorrow. So if I search, I'll get some cars, and then I can add them to this short list. And you'll see that if I move back and forth, these are all, you know, part of the same list here. So what I have created here, this is kind of standard stuff, but what I have created here is an opportunity for us to learn about templated components with generics. So if we come over to this code, which is the Flight Finder code, you see that I've got these two high-level pages. So this is like the main page. This is where the flight search happens, and you see the flight search results. And then I've got this car rental page, which is where you see the car rentals and the car rental results. Now, I want to dig into these. I'm going to dig into this a little bit, and we're going to be spending our time inside this car rental search results. So you remember at the top, we had the search area. At the bottom, we had the results area. And at the right-hand side, we had the short list, or like the list of things that are being considered. We're going to be spending our time inside this results control, our component, and see what we can do with that. So I've got a car rental search results, and I've got a flight search results here. And if you pull these out and look at them side by side, and it may be a little hard to do this with the window size and the font size, you'll start to notice that these two things are really kind of the same. I mean, they have the same markup. They both take a list of itineraries. They both sort the list, and then they both display some kind of component in the body. They really are kind of the same. So this is a good opportunity for us to use generics and templated components to sort of like extract the common features of these and make a component that's a little bit more reusable. So what I'm gonna do is I am going to grab all the content here, and we're gonna just sort of do this live. So I have got another component here that I already created that doesn't really have anything in it. And I am going to start us off by doing this. So I have this at type param directive, and we'll say t result because these are search results. So now you see I've declared a generic type parameter, and I can start filling this in places. So I'm going to uncomment this code. This is my little sorting helper here. I'm going to uncomment this code, and you can see I've already got t result here, and that's going to light up, and that works. I've now got a generic in here.
So that's like defining a generic parameter on the class.
Exactly.
For the component.
Exactly. So I'm going to grab now the itineraries, and I'm going to bring that over here because we're going to need to pass in the results. And then the other thing I'm going to pass in is, because you notice that the way that these are sorted in a way that's specific to flight itineraries. So we're going to need a generic way to sort this. And I've already done sort of the library work for this. I've already done all the uninteresting things. I'm just going to show you the Blazor part of it. So I'm going to declare a parameter, and it's going to be an iReadOnly list of string display text to iComparer of tResult. And then this will be our sort options. We're going to pass in the options for sorting so we can sort it in a generic way. And then this should be tResult because it's not going to be hard-coded anymore. So what else do I need? Well, I noticed that I've got flight search result here. And I want to basically mix up the last demo with this demo. I need to pass in the thing that I want to render here. So I'm going to have this list of sorted itineraries, which I'm going to change this right now. So this should be sort of items or itineraries. Can't spell. Should be sort of itineraries. So you can see that this is tResult. So I need something here that can render a tResult. Well, I can combine templates and generics. So I'll have a render fragment of tResult.
tResult.
And we'll call this like result content so that I can pass that in. And then to use this, it's just like I did before. This is going to be result content, and I just pass in the item. So I've sort of like abstracted out this loop, right? Now there's one other change that I have to make here is I have to deal with the fact that this is hard-coded to use the flight itinerary sort instead of these sort options. So I'm just going to do that real quick. Less than sort.count, sort options.count. I always get this confused between count and length, and I always want to use length for iReadOnly list, which is the best interface in .NET. And then we're going to put this option inside the loop and use our variable here. And then instead of using the enum value, we're just going to use the index because that would cause problems with generics to actually use the enum value. And then this will be the text that we get from sort options. Oh, I forgot my at. That's why it's not completing. Display text. So now we're going to render all of the sort options in this options dropdown so somebody can pass in the sort options. Somebody can pass in a result content to render from here. And if you look at this, you see that there's no flight options. There's no flight anything in here. What are we complaining about here? Does not contain a definition for compare. Oh, because I didn't give it a name. Does not contain any flight anything or any car anything. It's become totally, totally generic at this point. And if I give this a build, this should build. I haven't used it yet. We'll do that next. Okay, good. So we've done a build. So let's come over here and let's use it. So inside of here, instead of flight search results, I'm going to plug in my generic search results. Now I still need to pass in the itineraries. So in this case, it's a flight search results. So I'll pass those in. And then I need to pass in the sort options. Now I mentioned that I had done this earlier, so I've already kind of stashed these away somewhere out of the way. Itinerary.getSortOptions. So I already stashed these away somewhere else. And then inside the body of this, we're going to need to specify that result content. And the result content, if we look back at this search results, was just this guy. So I'll grab that, put that here inside result content. And then remember we had talked about the parameter names for these templates before. This parameter name by default will not be item. It will be context. So we could either use context here or we could rename it. I like item a little bit better, so we'll put item here. And then this is coming from our app state container, so that's a different variable. So now I can get rid of this because we're done with that. And what if I got a little bit of an error here? We'll have to check that out. I think that this needs to be an action. So just have to do this. Does not take zero arguments. Okay, hold on a second.
It's an action, so it takes an argument.
Argument
T, right?
Yeah.
This part kind of seems kind of hard.
Yeah, it is a little hard.
No disrespect intended.
Yeah.
Is this C-sharp that's making this hard?
It is C-sharp that's making it hard, and it's me being forgetful that's making it hard.
Well, I mean, you're blaming yourself for a language thing that's confusing.
Yeah, so what I need to do, it's what I need, is I need to add to shortlist. So I had the wrong function name because it's called different things in different places. So I'm passing to this component, I'm going to pass in, you know, for whatever item you have, add that item to the itinerary. So if we run this now, this should all just work. And you should see the flight page, the flight search page and search results page come up sort of as it is. So remember, this is the same thing we saw before. And I can do a search, and I've got sorting here. These are already sorted in the same order for both. So let's see if we can get a different one. But I've got my sorting here. These are also already in order by shortest. I've got my sort here. I've got my add to item, add to shortlist. And I've got all these little things here that all work the same. And I've made the code for this gray window down here, this bottom portion, is all completely generic.
Works for both car rentals or for flights.
Yeah.
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 Cool. So that's kind of like an application of the, like you integrating that into your application development, but you can sort of imagine then taking the feature and building out like component libraries that have generic functionality that then can be reused in a variety of applications, not like even not tailored to just one.
Yeah, this is kind of, I think Steve and I said that this was an intermediate usage of feature like this. So we're kind of diving into the deep end here a little bit, but features like templated components and generics together are really a little more targeted at authoring controls and authoring reusable little bits of functionality. The really neat part of this that makes this go is kind of how generics interact with the compiler. So something else that you can do with this, if you use generics in C# before, you know that sometimes the type can be inferred and sometimes the type has to be specified. Well, we actually let you specify the type because sometimes it can be inferred and sometimes it can't be. So when you write a component that is a generic type like we did, we add an extra parameter here so that you can specify the type if you need to.
And that matches the name of the type parameter to the for the component.
So yeah, so this parameter name is derived from the type name of the component. Yeah. And that won't be needed all the time, but it will be needed, I think, in some complicated cases. There's some things that don't infer super, super well. But that's kind of an overview of this. So we've got a couple features that are working together here. We've got generics, we've got multiple child content parameters. We've got child content parameters with parameters, and all these things put together to make it possible for you to write things that are a little more high level and a little more reusable.
Super cool.
I wanted to relay some comments that we're getting from the viewers.
Please, yes.
A couple of folks commenting about having the code in the component file. We get this.
Yep.
There's always some people who make that comment. We've made it clear that you can put the code for a component in a different file. Yeah. I think it's an inheritance model currently as well.
The answer that we would give and we have been giving is that we're working on it.
Yes.
So what we hope will work and what we hope people will like is we hope to enable you to use partial classes for this.
Okay.
We think people are familiar with partial classes. They work pretty well. The reason why we haven't done it yet is we have to get the tooling side of it sorted out first.
Yes.
There's some artifacts of the way tooling works that don't work well with partial classes, and we're working on it.
Okay.
We're aware of the feedback and we're working on it.
So it's there's no right or wrong. Some folks like to have it in the one file. It's very common to see that in other component-based UI frameworks, especially mm-hmm. from the Spa world. It's very common to have it together. From the .NET side of the world, we seem to see a lot of more folks prefer to have them separated, and there seems to be some connotation with bad practice or something with them together. I'm not gonna jump on either bandwagon. Do whatever makes you happy, but just, one is not inherently correct versus the other one. You will be able to do either. It's fine.
But for the folks that want to do it today, you said, there is an inheritance model.
Yes.
And the way you do it is, if you had counter.cshtml, you can define a counter.cshtml.cs and define a counter base class that derives from Blazor component. And then in your cshtml file, you say inherits from that base component. And then you can put all of your code, like your event handling methods, your on init, whatever, in the base class.
Right.
And that allows the majority of the code that would normally live in the app functions section to move into a separate file. So you can do it today.
Yep.
Like Ryan said, though, that we would like to do that with partial classes.
Different idea.
It kind of speaks to the fact that Blazor is a big chunk of it has been operating in this experimental mode. Like, for as much as possible, we've been trying to use the available extensibility points that we have, the available tooling extensibility points that we have, to enable as much of the experience as we can without really going too deep into like making actual runtime feature changes. As we move into this 3.0 wave, like actually productizing Razor components and making that part of the ASP.NET Core experience, we do of course plan to start doing those things.
And there'll be a big tooling train that will be able to make some of these underlying changes. I mean, we could have built the partial class support, it just wouldn't have worked well in VS, right? Mm-hmm. So it could have been done, but why do that if you can't really dev in it and then get feedback on that model because the tooling's so broken? I think one of the philosophies that we've tried to keep with this, as Dan just said, is that we want the tooling experience to be there that's good enough that you can use the bits as they are right now during the experiment so you can give reasonable feedback. And that's part of kind of the way we build product. It's what we've known for a while is that we try and build really great tooling experiences so you get a nice, what we call a dev in a loop, and that you're just sitting there typing code all the time. So I think that's worthwhile. I think it's worthwhile making sure that we're going to postpone this because it requires a whole bunch of tooling things. We can't retrofit it in using existing things. So we're just going to, do it this way for the moment. We'll get back to that while we work on other stuff. Mahmut asks, how's the debugging experience with Blazor in 0.6.0? I think it's basically browser-based, like Chrome debugging right now.
The in-browser debugging experience is effectively unchanged. Right. It's what it was in 0.5, which means that it's a pretty rough experience. It's enough to demo and show how the pieces fit together. And you can maybe debug some very simple cases, but it if you breathe on it wrong, it kind of tends to fall over. That said, in our next Blazor release, we've been talking with the Mono folks, and they have they had shifted focus a little bit to focus on the AOT story, mm-hmm. and they are still doing that, but they've managed to shuffle their resources a bit so that they now have someone who can actually go back and devote more time to the debugging experience. So we're expecting to see some nice improvements coming, hopefully, in the 0.7 wave.
Okay.
I think it definitely can improve the debugging experience, but I was super impressed to see how well it did work. And I had a cores issue, and it was not formatted beautifully, but the information I needed to solve my problem was there.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see it get better, but I don't think it's fair to say it's awful. It's actually pretty amazing to go whoa, I'm debugging C# code in the browser using Chrome developer tools. And it worked. I got my exception. I figured out my problem.
Yeah. One thing I would say is that if you're looking for a debugging experience for your Blazor app, one thing that some people have been doing is they will swap back and forth between the server side model and the client side model. They hop over to server side, then you get full .NET Core debugging.
Assuming the bug is it represents, you know, reproduces in both places.
That's true, yes.
That's the first thing to try. Yep. That, you know, works pretty well.
It's certainly an option that, that has worked for a lot of people to swap back and forth to get the benefits of that model.
Mamut also asks about CSS. How is CSS handled in Blazor 06? I believe someone else, or he again asks later on, will there be a way to package static resources in, oh, here it is, it's Vladislav asks, any chance of style encapsulation for components, similar like real web components? And Dan and I were talking about this just yesterday, I think. You know, we did raise a class libraries in ASP.NET Core 2.1, which was kind of the first step to what if we could have the ability to like build a Razor thing you could reuse, but we don't have a first class story for, great, it has some images in it and some style sheets and some JavaScript, and I can just like use it like a control. Blazor components are much further along in that story, is my understanding.
Blazor components will at least allow you to package with the component class library the static assets that it uses.
Okay.
We don't have a like encapsulation model. Like we're not trying to like encapsulate this chunk of CSS for that component versus that chunk of CSS
Please
for
don't.
That component.
That's all
great. Yeah, I mean people are coming, particularly from like the Angular world.
Yeah.
Like they ask for it. And
does that involve rewriting usually? Like how do they do the encapsulation like safely?
Steve's probably a great guy to take some of these.
Steve, questions. Are you there? Or have you just turned your camera off to be?
Yeah, I turned it off because my machine is absolutely dying when it's on. But okay. Anyway, I am here.
How do folks usually do that?
So. It is a form of rewriting.
Okay.
Yeah. So you need to pre-process the CSS to go through, change all of the class selectors to add a special like GUID prefix to it. And then you put the GUID on all of the HTML attributes and the right stuff matches up.
It seems so anti how CSS should be done, but I can understand. I mean, you've got two tensions working against each other here, which is you want this isolation, this componentization of UI, but you want to use this cascading-based system with inheritance rules and specificity rules in order to facilitate it. You just kind of have to go, well, we can't have both of those things, so let's just carve out a part of the world with a GUID. And that's what we'll use. So I've never looked closely at how they do it in on that side of the fence. And I'm interested in how you have a component that can inherit some aspects of the page that it's in or the component that it's in, but also have its own things. Now, these aren't unique problems. So we've had this issue with doing web-based UI composition forever. Like there's been lots of different ways of trying to solve this. Most CMSs have some type of way. Most control frameworks often come with a manager control that like is the marshaller on the page of what CSS gets loaded when and how they compose together. And I've seen some patterns in the CSS community too where people come up with like mini frameworks. They're not frameworks, they're more like rules to follow to structure CSS in a way that they compose as well together. And then you've got things like Bootstrap and stuff like that as well, which tries to give you things that you can just lay on top. But that's an interesting problem. I guess the short answer is we don't have a panacea for you just yet.
We don't.
No.
And I don't even know if I'd say it's particularly high on our backlog right now. I think this may be one of those areas where we, to take a similar strategy to what the React community has done, which is like we'll provide the base component model framework and then see what the community comes up with around CSS encapsulation.
But at the bare minimum, like I think we would get to the point, like you said, where you'd have your component library, you can put components in it with static files, and they all get embedded into the same DLL, and thus package. But then on the consumption side, when you bring that in, the question is, great, I have the types, that's easy, that's the .NET part, but like, how do the static files get served? Do we have a pattern in ASP.NET Core where we can find them in the ref, like a web part, what do we call it, the application parts type thing, and then the static file handler can find those or something? Like, we could do stuff like that.
We have some basic patterns today. Like, Steve, do you want to talk a little bit about how the Blazor component libraries surface the static assets that get embedded in them?
Yeah, so with a Blazor component library, we use some MSBuild metadata to identify which files are the static assets that you want to make possible to serve. And so as part of the build process, we will drop those static files in a location that the middleware can find runtime. So basically, it does just work without you having to do anything.
Okay.
And if you want to customize it, you need to get into the MSBuild side of it.
But they don't remain. I guess the key there is that on the consumption side, the static files don't remain componentized. They actually get exploded back out into the project in a known location so that they can be served.
Yeah, you don't see it because it only appears in your bin directory, effectively.
I see.
But it is there for the runtime.
So they're not even embedded, is that right? Like when you build the Blazor component library, it's not like they're embedded aesthetic resources. They're just treated as content when the package gets packaged up.
We changed from one design to the other, and I can't even remember which one we ended up with. But whichever is the better design,
that's the one we did. Okay. Hopefully. Yeah.
Now Steve does have another demo too.
He does. That's fine. So we want to show
some things the team is working on now as well.
I just wanted to make sure that I got these comments as they went through. Okay, that's probably fine for now. Let's jump over to Steve. You've got a demo for us, is that right?
Yeah. All right then. Let's turn my camera off and start sharing my screen. Tell me when you see the counter.
We are good.
We do.
You do see it?
Yep.
Okay, good. All right then. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things we're trying to do in the 0.7 release, which obviously hasn't come out yet. But one of the ideas we've got with this release is to build on the work that Ryan's done on templated components and make it easier to build more interesting high-level components, the sort of thing that you'll remember from all of the UI toolkits, things like grids and tabs and, you know, carousels or whatever, all these kinds of controls that people are used to, making sure that they can be modeled really well as Blazor components. Okay, so templated components is part of that. Another part of it that we haven't addressed prior to now is the ability for components to communicate based on ancestor and descendant relationships. So you might want to say, okay, for all of the components within this particular subtree of my UI, I want them all to share a certain bit of data. Or you might want to say something like, okay, I've got a grid row component and it needs to be able to find which grid it's inside in order to be able to interact with it in various ways. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Good. All right. So let me show you a couple of demos of things that we are freshly working on. This is very, very fresh indeed. It's not merged into master yet. It was literally implemented today. So we will just hope that it all works out okay. Okay. So
I was just going to say one of the highlights of watching you, Steve, is that you show us stuff that you built 20 minutes ago, and it's amazing and polished, and we all want you to ship it right now.
No pressure, though. No pressure.
I love the preamble before you blow our minds.
I'm just very, very good at lying. Okay. All right. So you can see the counter component, right? You've all seen this before. It's got this blue button. We click it. The count goes up. All right. So let's say we don't want this button to be blue necessarily. In fact, we don't know what color we want it to be yet. We want to have a sort of theming system built into our application so that we can define themes in one location and all the components within a certain part of our UI will be able to pick up that theme information. Okay. So why is our button blue right now? Well, it's because of this CSS class here, button primary. So that's something defined in Bootstrap 4. And that makes things blue by default, okay? But I want to have a way of changing that, and I'm going to do so by defining a class called ThemeInfo, just a normal C# class with this string property called ButtonClass on it, okay? And I want to have a way of providing instances of this to a particular subset of my user interface. And I can do that using a new feature, which is called the Provider Component. And you can put a provider in any component you want. And in this little demo, I'm going to put it into my layout because in Blazor, layouts are components, just like pages are components, just like components are components. Everything is components, okay? So here we are inside the main layout, and I'm going to instantiate one of these theme infos, okay? And I'm going to say that the button class on this theme is button success, all right? So to provide that, I can choose which part of the UI I want to provide it to, and I'm going to provide it to whatever is the body part of the page. I can put this wherever I want, really, but I'm going to put a provider here, and I'm going to say the value we are providing is the theme, okay? And let's get the nesting correctly. All right, so if I recompile my application now, and then I go back into a browser and reload, let's see what effect that has on this blue button. The effect it has is nothing at all. Why is that? Because I have not been consuming the value that's been provided yet. So let's say we want to consume that value. I'm going to go over to the counter component now, and I'm going to consume it as a parameter. So if you've used Blazor before, you'll be familiar with parameters. They are something that gets passed into your component, and the value can change, and the value can be whatever type you want, and so on. So in this case, I'm going to be taking a theme info, and I can give it any name I want. I'm going to call it current theme, because that obviously makes sense. And we'll put get and set on that. Okay. Now, with this defined as it is, this is just a normal parameter, which means it's part of the contract between this component and its immediate parent. But that's not what we want in this case. We don't want this value to come from the immediate parent necessarily. We want it to come from any ancestor that can provide that value. So I'm going to use this new flag called from tree. And the naming here, by the way, is very likely to change. So I've sort of made this up without really thinking it through very carefully. We're going to inevitably have meetings and such and decide what the right names for these things are really going to be. So it might not be called from tree. It might be called something like from ancestor, or it might be something like cascades equals true or something. I don't know. But let's not worry about that right now. Logically, we're just getting this parameter from somewhere in the ancestry. Okay. And since we're doing that, I can now say, instead of displaying button primary, I'm going to emit current theme dot button class. Okay. Hopefully the value will be provided further up the tree by the provider component, and then it can be picked up by any descendant that wants to get the current theme info. So now when I reload my browser, instead of the blue button, you'll see we've got a green button, because that's what the theme information declares. And if I wanted to change that, then of course I can go back to whichever part of the UI subtree is receiving that theme, and I can change what gets passed to it. Let's say button danger. That's another one of the built-in Bootstrap 4 styles. So now when I reload, instead of green, I'm going to get red. Okay. So this is a very simple way of using providers to supply data down an entire subtree. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it actually, I'm going to say something sacrilege. I'm super sorry. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. It looks like themes in System Web, in web forms.
Yeah, it would, except it's way more general, because it's not just for themes. It's
no, of
for
course.
All the
yeah, and of course.
It seems like there's going to be a class of person who is going to look at this and say, it looks like Polymer, it looks like web components, these things are all very important. There's the overloading of words component, but then there's also the old heads that are going to say, this looks like web forms. And it seems like that's a good thing. It is the best concepts from all the different things.
Yeah,
generic.
And I didn't at all mean that in with any connotation whatsoever. I was thinking back to, I think nearly every UI platform framework eventually has some type of way to do theming. And to Steve's point, this isn't specifically about theming. It's just about, from my understanding, it's basically a way of tunneling values down the component tree, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Theme is a common example. So This feature in Blazor is very similar to the inject feature from Vue, and it's very similar to what used to be called context in React. So, you know, all these UI frameworks do essentially share the same concept.
Right.
And theming is basically the hello world example that everybody uses when tunneling data from one place to another. That's why I've shown you that. Sure. But I will show you a more interesting example now. So it's not just about passing data, but it's also about enabling collaboration between components. And to give you a concrete example of that, let's think about tabs. Right, so tabs don't just live on their own. They live as part of a family, a little group of tabs all together. And if you are representing that as components, you probably have something like a tab set component. And inside there, you put a bunch of tabs. Okay, and these need to collaborate, because when you click on one of those tabs, we have to have a way of telling the tab set to unselect whatever was the selected thing before and select the new thing and change what is being displayed. So you need this form of collaboration. And it's based on ancestor-descendant relationships, because you could have multiple tab sets in different parts of your application, and you need each tab to know which tab set it's part of. Now, you could do this in the past with Blazor by manually wiring everything up, but the point of this inherited parameters or tree parameters, whatever we call it, is that the wiring can be done by the person who authors the controls, the components, not by the person who is consuming them. So if you're building a UI toolkit, you can use this feature to make your components work together, and the person uses them without having to think about that. So I have, about an hour ago, made a very, very simplistic version of tab sets. And let's just use that now, and then I'll show you how it works. So here on my homepage, I'm going to add a tab set. Okay, and inside that, we'll put a tab, and we can give it a title, first tab, and we'll put some content inside there. Let's say this is the first tab, and arguably it is the best tab. Okay, and then we'll have another tab, title equals, let's say counter. And just to show you can put arbitrary things in there, I'm going to put a counter component inside that tab. All right, so let's just show you this working, and then I'll show you how it works and how it does this collaboration using tree parameters. So back over here, you'll see we've got these tabs now that we've just added, and they do actually work. So I can switch between first and counter like you'd expect. And the counter does actually work because, you know, it's just a normal component and it's picked up the themes and everything's working like it should. Okay, but how does it work? So how do the components talk to each other? Well, if I go into this implementation of tab set here, you will see that it's not completely trivial. I'm not going to pretend that it is. It's 51 lines and not all of it is totally obvious. But the important bit that you need to understand is that we are using these providers to enable collaboration between components. So here, the tab set, just before it renders its own child content, it says, I'm going to provide myself to all the children. So any of the descendants that want to find which tab set they are inside can just say, oh, I want to receive a tab set as a parameter, and they're going to get the tab set that they are inside. So if I go over onto the tab, you will see that here, I've got this tree parameter that's of type tab set called ancestor tab set. And so the tab can discover what tab set it's inside. It doesn't have to be the immediate parent. It can be any ancestor. And then we can do things like when we get created, we'll register ourselves. When we get disposed, we'll unregister ourselves. Now, there is some weird stuff going on here, like all these weird casts. You can just ignore that.
The double
just
cast.
Pretend. This is a workaround for one of the same issues that Ryan alluded to earlier. Just pretend you don't see that, because that will go away eventually. Anyway, the point is that components can discover each other based on ancestor relationships and then call methods on each other. And that allows you to do this sort of collaboration. Dang. And this sort of form of building components declaratively, well, it's not just declarative, it's also procedural. I want to show you a thing that might not be obvious that you could even do it. So let's say I want to add a third tab here. So I'm just going to copy paste that. And I'll call it third tab. Good. But I don't always want to display this third tab. I want to display it conditionally based on some flag. Now, with most traditional UI frameworks, you would have to have some special sort of APIs to say add tab and remove tab and that sort of thing. But with this model, I don't have to do any of that. I can just have a bool value, show third tab, okay? And then based on that, I can just use an if statement. If show third tab, we're going to show that. And if not, then we won't. And then to toggle that, I'll put a checkbox in here. Input type equals checkbox. And I'm going to bind that to the show third tab thing, like that. Okay? So now, back in the UI, when I reload, we should see that we've got the three tabs. No, we haven't got three tabs yet because I haven't checked this checkbox. When I check it, the third tab will appear. I can go and show it. I can go back. I can uncheck it. The tab disappears.
I just have to stop here for a second and say my brain hurts. And two, this style of this modern component-based style for UI frameworks that is both declarative and imperative still really does my head in. The fact that you can write that, I mean, I grew up in the world of these things being much more declarative and you data binding drove everything because it was all server based, right? But even in WinForms and WPF, you would have a strong data binding system and you would rely on I notify property change and all those type of things. This world where I can, because things are reevaluated, right? I'm assuming this is how this works. Like the fact that checkbox went,
it's just
an automatic reevaluation.
It's just
occurred.
Like MVVM style binding, right? So as soon as you make a change, then it's
It's more than that because nothing declared those things as like bind as a binding. It's like it's just that I'm using that property in an expression, like an if statement. That's not a binding declaration in the traditional sense of the word, the way that we kind of were all brought up with binding systems, where you have a binding expression, which is a different thing. Like in XAML, there's a binding expression. In ASP.NET, there's a binding expression.
The frameworks take the code away from you.
Right, they take, and you can't do everything in a binding expression that you can do in a normal code block. In here, it's just code. And like there's this incredible mix of declaration and imperative flow. And it's so deceptively simple. When he wrote that code, I was like, well, that can't work. Like, it's too easy. Yeah. Like, you just wrapped it in if statement. I'd have to, like, don't I have to declare, like, a Boolean thing with it, a binding thing and, like, a two-way, blah, blah, blah. No, it just works. Sorry, I just, it still does my head in every time I see it. Please.
Yeah, it's cool. So the fact that we can do this really is the combination of the templated components. That's an essential part of this because a tab set is a templated component. A tab is also a templated component. And it's a combination of the generic components as well. That might not be obvious, but if I go back over here, this provider is a provider of T. If you can read incredibly small text, you'll see that that's what that is. So the value we're providing there is generic as well, which means that we can differentiate different types of nulls and things like that. That wouldn't be possible if it wasn't a generic component. And finally, it's these ability to do tree parameters that allow you to pass stuff up and down the ancestry. So
like
the combination
the
of those two things allows us to model some really interesting bits of UI in quite natural ways.
Incredible.
So we hope.
So
that's my demo.
In terms of like the same sort of thing, when I was looking, I was working on something and I had to like, I was looking for how do I notify it to change and how do I notify an update, and it just magically does it, right? And so is it kind of almost like a React style way of thinking, where if I set a property on somewhere on the tree, it like smartly figures out what to re-render and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's very much a React style of things. It's so much a React style of things that it's not magic. When you change your properties, you sometimes have to notify the system that you've done that, because it's not sort of magically inspecting the state of all your .NET objects and observing if they change in some way. So if you change them outside the flow of Blazor's normal event model, then Blazor doesn't know that you've done that. And that's why you have this state has changed method that you have to call if you're working outside the event model.
And the main, Steve, the main case where that comes up is async, right? Are there other cases where that comes up a lot?
Yeah, another case will be collaboration between components. So let me show you what tab set is doing. You'll see that at the end of these on tab added and on tab removed, I'm calling state has changed, because otherwise the framework just doesn't know that you've done anything. Like, we've called a method on a class and it's mutated some of its internal state, but Blazor doesn't know that you've done that, because the event that caused the tab to be removed is not part of the tab set. Blazor's not going to re-render every single thing in your entire application. It only re-renders the thing that triggered the event. So that's what I mean by being outside the normal event model.
Very cool.
So from that point of view, it's almost like I notify property change, except you don't have to say which property, you just say something's changed.
Yeah, that's right. And some people have actually really adopted the I notify property change model. If you want to, you can do that. You can have a base component that supports that interface and triggers state has changed at the right time and such. So if you like that pattern, you can absolutely use that, and then you can forget about state has changed. But we're being a little bit more general than that and allowing multiple different notification models.
Cool.
So we're 59 minutes in. I had one more question someone asked, which I thought might be worth getting some comments on from you folks. Someone asked about, it's funny, this came up in a meeting we had yesterday too, about web components, and they were looking at this and going, this is amazing. It would be wonderful if this was, when it hit the browser, it was using similar technologies to other things like shadow DOMs and virtual CSS properties and all this other type of stuff. And I think they were wishing for the same type of world that we've talked about, where imagine you could just write a web component in any language and it's a standard web component, and you could load it into any app that was using any UI framework. Steve, do you have any comments about that? Like, I don't know the latest status. My understanding is that no one's really achieved that holy grail yet, even across the JavaScript-based frameworks. to some extent?
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. So as for how we can approach this in Blazor, I think we can take it from a couple of different angles. So there's the angle of I'm writing a mostly Blazor component, but I want to use some web components type technologies within it, such as Shadow DOM or such as web components written in other languages and frameworks. And so it's possible to imagine that we'll put in some infrastructure to make all that stuff work. And then there's the other angle of it, which is I'm writing a Blazor component and I want to expose it as a web component so that it can be used in something else. And again, it's possible to imagine some sort of library-like feature that adapts Blazor's APIs to the web component APIs so that other frameworks could consume the component without having to know what it is implemented in. So that's a similar model that's been attempted with Angular already, and they've had some success with that.
Okay.
We haven't really got started, but we could do more or less the same thing.
Cool. So it sounds like possible, deep on the backlog, but certainly something that could be looked at in the future as maybe those patterns mature between the different things.
If someone wants to play around with it,
they could try it now.
Let us know how that works out. That would be a fun community project to go and try.
All right, so we're an hour in, so we should call it. Thanks very much, everyone, again, for joining us. Thanks, Steve, for your demo from old England town. That's not right at all.
Very old England.
Very old England town.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Ryan, for joining us and showing us your stuff again.
Awesome demo, yeah.
Where can folks get Blazor, Dan?
At Blazor.net.
Blazor.net. Okay.
And I got to say thank you also to the community folks. Like, honestly, a big chunk of what Blazor is not just the work of the people here that code on it, but also the people that are building samples and libraries and component libraries, interop libraries. Like, that's a huge chunk of what the Blazor experience really is today. Thank you for all that great work that you guys are doing.
And finally, we've reiterated the announcement a few times that we plan to now take a lot of the Blazor component model into ASP.NET Core 3, at least so you can do that from your server-side apps. When will we have a little more detail on that? When can customers and folks in the community start to see what that will look like?
We are actively working through the open design issues and questions on the Razor component model for ASP.NET Core 3.0. I don't know. What would you say would be a good time?
Before Christmas?
Before Christmas.
Yeah. Well, some kind of design proposals and public activity, I would say, before Christmas.
Lovely. Well, yeah. I look forward to seeing that. And I'm sure everyone else does too. John, Scott, do you have anything to add before we close out today?
Go ahead.
Sorry. I have a lot of value to add in that there's somewhere in the comments someone suggested an OBS plugin that could digitally do the dramatic zoom out.
Yes, we have actually. We've stated that a couple times that it should be possible, and we have never done anything about it. But yes, I think we could probably have a button on here that would just take the thing and
send us a pull request.
So while it's somewhat interesting that we've compiled the whole of .NET to run inside of the browser, I think that a dramatic zoom out button would be really what we need to focus on as a team right now.
I'll get right on it. Dan, I need you to get on that. Thanks very much. John, you were going to say something before we close off?
Actually, exactly that we need a dramatic zoom out.
Awesome.
Prioritize that.
I apologize again for the lack of dramatic zoom out. I'm not going to mess with the OBS stuff because we spent an hour today resetting this up to make it perfect. So I'm sorry, everyone. You'll just have to live with it. But again, thanks for joining us and share this around so that we get the Blazor love out there and continue to get feedback on it. And we'll see you again. Do we have a guest for next week lined up? Do we know what we're talking about next week yet, John?
Not yet.
We'll sort it out. It'll be great. Tune in next week. It'll be one of the morning shows on our time next week. So. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
And we're out.
Hooray!
Yay.